Stuff with Steve Hothersall on Radio City Talk.
We couldn't let today pass without catching up with Sky Sports' Barry Cowan to reflect on Andy Murray's victory yesterday. So let's talk it through with him. Morning, Barry.
Good morning, Steve. Stunning, wasn't it?
What did it mean? What do you think that meant within his career progression?
For me, the best achievement that I think he's ever had. Obviously, two Wimbledon titles, and when we can reel them off, the Olympics, the US Open. But what was on the line to try and end the year as world number one? Because it was interesting that what became apparent sort of more and more as the week progressed, and sort of being around, speaking to sort of ex-world number ones and their comments, that so they feel often it's a bigger achievement. And I thought Mats Wilander, who was on our coverage, and he spoke brilliantly. He was a former world number one. He said, "Well, you know, if you were to ask a taxi driver, you know, when you're 52 years of age, which Mats is, what's that you're a world number one, or you won a French Open, you won an Australian, it means more." I think they think in a few years' time, and rightly so, Andy is amongst the Federers and Nadals and the Djokovic's in terms of ending the year number one. Of course, he hasn't got the amount of numbers, year-end number ones that they have had, but the Grand Slams and now the world number one. But it's 12 months, and when we've discussed it throughout this year, 12 months of relentless hard work. And anyone that watched the tennis last week, 3 hours 20 minutes against Nishikori on Wednesday, 3 hours 38 minutes against Raonic on Saturday, and then to come back and play the way he did yesterday and win the physical battle. That's what astounded me. And I had Djokovic as the heavy favourite, but sometimes Andy has liked to be the underdog. He's liked to prove people wrong. He's liked to sort of go under the radar a little bit, and he certainly had the final say.
I mean, just to reiterate what you were saying there, I was surprised when I was watching the Sky coverage and I saw John McEnroe say exactly the same. He said he was more concerned about finishing as number one at the end of the year than winning the majors. And I think that sort of confounds what a lot of people think.
Yeah, because you know, we often get caught up in this. Really, and it was the start of his career, wasn't it, with Andy? Well, you know, is he ever going to win a Grand Slam? Is he ever going to win Wimbledon? The focus was never on world number one. But I think that's the honest truth for Andy, that he wasn't sure. I think he always thought he could win a Grand Slam. But obviously he came up short a few times. But I think deep down he wasn't ever sure that he could be world number one, because although Andy has learned to peak for the big majors, what he wasn't able to do was this relentless week in, week out. I mean, because you every time you walk onto court, someone's trying to knock you down. And this run that since he lost in the Davis Cup against Del Potro in 5 sets, he went to Beijing, he won there. He won in Shanghai the week after. Then he had a week off, came back to Europe, won in Vienna, won in Paris, and then has now been able to win here in London, undefeated in the autumn. That's what it's taken, and he got there in the last match. And as well, I think what's poignant is that the question was often asked to all of us last week was, well, who deserves to be number one? Well, my gut feeling was, given what Andy's run the last 6 months, I think he deserved. But then you've got to look at Djokovic. I mean, he won 2 majors. He was a dominant player at the first 6 months. So I think it's only fitting that it ended the way it did do.
Has he just simply matured? Is this the difference? Or has he reached an extra level within his game as well? Or has Djokovic changed? Or what has been the extra factor?
I think there's factors. I think there's a number of factors that have been crucial. I think he's very settled off the court. I think Andy has always been, I mean, his tennis, tennis, tennis. Everything is about tennis. His attention to detail. Even in his downtime, he'd be even watching the Challenger event on the internet, which is the second rung of the ladder. He'll be watching a British player play in Timbuktu. I mean, he's obsessed with it. But I think the fact that he's obviously had this first child, I think, helps sort of take away in your downtime about tennis and focus on something else. And other factors, I think, have come together. The settled coaching team, which wasn't the case last year. Lendl coming back on board hasn't been there the whole time. But just little things that can often help Andy. And when he beat Djokovic for his first US Open, He's and just some very simple words. Are you ready to, suffer? And yesterday it was, you know, convincing Andy, trying to, you know, to almost bluff it that he was fine physically, and all that hard work that he put in training wise, that's where it really counts. And you know, just the ability to be able to get on that run, and well, he's always had an incredible determination, incredible fight. But yeah, the confidence has bred confidence, and he hasn't looked back.
Let's also bring in MJ from the Bleacher Report. Mm. MJ, where does he rank in all-time greatest British athletes for you?
It's got to be up there now, hasn't he? It's got to be
top three
easily. Yeah, definitely. I'd say. I mean, it's not just his achievements. You know, in, when you look at them in the cold light today, it's the achievements he's managed to accrue with the quality of players around him. You know, Djokovic, like Barry said this year, was a force of nature in those first two majors. He was unbelievable at times. He held all four at once, didn't he? And to have come through at the end of the year and managed to get the world number one, win Wimbledon again, and that in itself is a staggering achievement. But he's got to be up there with the best British sportsman now. And I think that the thing that impressed me most about Murray in these last few months is there's been so many times when it seems as though his back's been against the wall, and there's been matches where you'd think, how can he get out of this? You know, even you look at the two matches against Nishikori and Raonic this week, he's on the back foot, the momentum seems to be going against him. You think the matches against Songa at Wimbledon when he was 2-0 up and Songa pulled it back to two sets all, and you're thinking he's going to go on to lose this now, but he somehow manages to find a way and dig deep and somehow get through those big points. And I think that's been the key thing for me in terms of his mentality. He has always been determined. He has always been a passionate player. But to come through and emerge on those big points and get through those big points, it's Federer-esque, I think. He's the only other player I can think of who's been so good and so consistent on those big moments.
Federer-esque. That's quite a compliment, Barry, isn't it?
It is. But, I mean, he should be, rightly so, he should be amongst the arguably the three of the greatest players we've ever had in this sport, in Federer, Djokovic and Nadal. Their numbers have been astounding, and that's what Andy has had to try and elevate his tennis. And it's often the case that by having great players means you've got to work hard. It means you've got to find other areas in your game that you have to get better. I mean, that's where Andy has improved so much. I mean, gone are the days when he'd become a very reactive player to the player that he is now, which is very aggressive, but very aggressive but smart. And that was also striking yesterday, was he didn't overplay. He didn't need to overplay. I mean, he set his stall out, and it was Djokovic who was mentally, I would say, fragile yesterday, which, having commentated on his match on Saturday evening where he totally destroyed Nishikori, you know, everything was pointing towards a Djokovic victory. We shouldn't forget, Djokovic had absolutely dominated Murray in their previous meetings. I know Murray beat him in Rome just before the French Open, but Djokovic had had a three-hour match the night before and was physically cooked. But he'd won all the big matches, so to have that turnaround mentally going into such a huge match where it was all on the line, whoever won was going to be the year-end number one. And thankfully, it was Andy's time, and thankfully Andy was able to put in the performance that he needed to get through Djokovic.
Sir Andy Murray, I'm sure it's only a matter of time.
All I say is, when he's finished.
When he's finished, that's finished, probably more appropriate, isn't it?
I do absolutely not want him to be Sir Andy Murray while he's still competing. It's a bit of a bugbear for me. I think while sportsmen are at the highest level, I think just let them do what they do great, and then obviously they can get the other huge reward afterwards.
We were just saying before, actually, just to bring a lighter note to it, the Sky Sports coverage yesterday, you do the interviews before the match, of course. Poor Leith having to interview those two before, where you get about four words out of them. I bet you're glad you don't have that gig, Barry.
Well, yeah, I had to interview two of them as well as the week progresses. It's a difficult one. Personally, I actually prefer to interview the coaches. I think you'd get a lot more. You'd get a lot more from them. It happens in football. You can speak to coaches before the matches because they are so reluctant to obviously say anything. I mean, the Raonic is the shortest. I mean, you know, he literally is two words. That's it.
that's although, no fun.
Although, Although if you had to interview Lendl, he wouldn't give you anything like that.
Well, I saw the Lendl interview as well before the match yesterday, and he gave Leith even shorter shred, if you like. He wasn't giving him any, you know.
He actually said, didn't he, I'm not going to tell you anything. It's just not a great start to an interview.
Just quickly then, Barry, is he going to he's going to keep this for how many years? He's 29 years old now. Is he going to stay at the top for how long?
Stay at the top or stay as number one?
Mm. Well, what's more important to him?
Probably both, to be honest. But the hardest part now is he's going to have a 2-week break. He's then going to have 2 weeks training in Miami, and then he's going to have to go all over again. And he's going to have to elevate his game because there's enough sharks in the sea who will be after him. Djokovic being number one, Federer being definitely up there. I mean, I don't think Federer can ever be number one again, but I would never rule out Federer being in the equation of being involved in big matches. Then you've got Nadal, then you've got the youngsters. But he's going to be, in my mind, number one, certainly for the first few months of next year, because of the way he didn't perform his best after Australia in February and March. It would be great to see him hold it for at least a year. But of course, it gets more difficult, doesn't it? Especially the age he is. And my fear is he's had to give so much to what he's done the last few months. There could be a danger that it might be a little bit what Djokovic had to endure after he won the French, where he obviously hasn't been at the same level. But the one thing that Andy will always promise, and the one thing that we've become accustomed to, he will fight and he will do everything within his powers to stay there.
Good man, Barry. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Pleasure.
See you, Barry. Okay.
There you go. That's Barry Cowan.
Steve Hothersall's kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.